As summer wanes and fall begins, movies geared toward adults are starting to show up at local theaters. There are even a few movies out there right now that are generating some Oscar buzz. Plus, early next month, the Kansas International Film Festival begins, bringing even more interesting movie choices to the KC area. I'm Russ Simmons, and today on Central Standard, we'll review flicks currently showing at your local Cineplex, and we want to know what you think. What did you see that was worthwhile, and which films should people avoid? We'll take your calls, and we'll find out just what the film festival has to offer this year. Join me, Russ Simmons, and my fellow film critics right after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Russ Simmons. Happy Friday the 13th, everybody. And lucky for you, it's movie day here on Central Standard. I'm joined by my fellow film critics. I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. And today I'm joined by...
Good morning. It's Marie Asner, who's always been lucky on Friday the 13th and found money. So here we go. I'm with PhantomTollbooth.org and OnAirPrep.com, which is a radio syndicate.
And good morning again. I'm Tom Poe, professor of film and media arts at UMKC.
And we're going to be talking about a lot of movies that have opened up over the last month or so, and we'd like your feedback. So what have you seen on the big screen in the last month or so? What was notable? What was notably bad? Let us know. Warn your fellow listeners about what's worth seeing and what's worth avoiding out there at the theaters. And you can share with us by calling 816-235-235. 2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. And you can also send us a note on Facebook. We'll try to get those in as well. But just contact us and join in on the conversation. You know, this is the time of year as summer wanes and the fall begins when we start to get a few more titles for adults. You know, we've gotten through most of the summer blockbusters and the action flicks for the kids. And now it's time when we start transitioning to a little bit more adult material. And one of those, even some, you know, Oscar buzz-worthy films have started to open. One of them is Blue Jasmine. So let's start out with that and let us know what you think. Tom?
Yes, the starting point of Blue Jasmine brings together two kind of cultural phenomena, one historical and one cinematic, and that is the Bernie Madoff financial scandal. And Tennessee Williams' great play, it was turned into the great film, Streetcar Named Desire. And it's all put together by Woody Allen. This is, I think, one of Woody Allen's strongest films in a long, distinguished career. And unique in that it is not a comedy, though there were certainly times that I was laughing, but ultimately a very serious drama about a woman that, in fact, had always kind of created herself, a lot like Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire. But she succeeded and married a very wealthy man and lived the life of one of New York's great socialites until he goes to prison, a la Bernie Madoff. Now she's penniless and has to go to San Francisco to live with her low-class sister. And as in Streetcar Named Desire, the sister is involved with a very rough kind of guy. So it really is about her living in illusion, going crazier and crazier as the film goes on. And I think that it's a terrific film. Woody Allen's amazing. Reminded me that his script for What's New Pussycat, we could all sing that song, goes back to 1964. Films like Annie Hall in 1977, Hannah and Her Sisters in 86. And then he went through sort of a period of critical and audience sort of, not disfavor, but kind of being ignored. But between 2008 and today, with Vicky Cristina Barcelona and then Midnight in Paris and now Blue Jasmine, it means keep working, folks. You just never know when you're going to have, towards the end of your career, a real renaissance. Of course, I think the key here is that Cate Blanchett's performance, I predict, is certainly going to be nominated for Best Actress, and I think she's going to win. I found that her performance was just really riveting all the way through. She can go through various moods so quickly, and I felt so naturally. I would give this script, certainly, 4 stars in the whole film. I think it's a great cast with Alec Baldwin and surprising performance by Andrew Dice Clay. And then add Kate Blanchett's performance. I'm going to add 0.5 for that alone and go to 4.5.
All right. And incidentally, I neglected to mention right off of the top that, you know, as we transition into the fall movies, we're also going to be talking about what's coming up at the Kansas International Film Festival early next month. And joining us on the show will be Brian Mossman of the Fine Arts Theater Group, as well as Dottie Hamilton, who is a professor at Avila University and an expert on film, and she's going to be talking about the programming and what's going to be going on in the special events there. And a lot of titles that are Oscar-worthy, that are generating Oscar buzz, are going to be playing at the festival. So we'll be talking about that in the second half of the show. Marie, I understand that you may not quite agree with Tom's assessment of Blue Jasmine.
Yes, you're correct in that. I agree with Tom that Woody Allen has put together a wonderful script here. I wouldn't go as far as 4 points for the script. I'd say 3.5 for the script. But the choice of Kate Blanchett, I didn't feel that she was genuine in her acting. I felt that it was acting when I was watching her. And in the film, she has an adoptive sister who's played by Sally Hawkins. And so Kate Blanchett is at the top of the society ladder, and Sally Hawkins is at the bottom of the society ladder. And it's the choice of men that they like. And when Hawkins comes on and Blanchett and they're talking, they cancel each other out. And so what could have been a best actress, what could have been a best supporting actress, to me is canceled. I think Woody Allen as a director could have sat on those two actresses just a little bit, especially Sally Hawkins, whose dithering hands that are flying all over that you can't see her face. You kind of close your eyes and wait for that scene to be over. However, the nice surprise here is Andrew Dice Clay, who comes in as kind of a Greek chorus. He's a person whose money was taken from him by one of Alec Baldwin's schemes. And every once in a while, he pops up unexpectedly to throw the situation off by saying, you know, I was wrong about this. What are you going to do about it? And then he kind of disappears. And it sets the scene in motion for going in another direction. And I kind of like that. I like this Greek chorus idea there. As a whole, I thought Blue Jasmine also not only told a story of a failed marriage, but told a story of alcoholism, because people can't face up to their problems. And we're going to find out as we talk about films today that there are 3 films, actually, that are dealing with alcoholism as part of the theme, and this is one of them. And it gets to be quite detrimental. I'm going to give this film 3 points.
Can I make a one-sentence rebuttal?
Sure.
I think that what is amazing about Kate Blanchett's performance is that her character, in fact, isn't genuine. She's always acting. And so I think that what you're sensing is probably, I would argue, intentional.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to side with Tom on this one. I think what she's doing here is brilliant. And I would love to see her sometime in A Streetcar Named Desire as Blanche DuBois. Our colleague Steve Walker has seen her play that role. And it's got to be that that Woody Allen had seen that or had that in the back of his mind, because this is a kind of a modern take on the themes from A Streetcar Named Desire. And her Blanche DuBois-style character really still rings true in a contemporary sense. And so I'm with you, Tom. I think that she's the front runner for the Oscar, and it's definitely worth seeing for that performance alone. So I'm going to give it a 4, and I think between the 3 of us, we're going to average it out to a 4, since Marie, you gave it 3.5, Tom, 4.5, and me a 4. So we're averaging right out there at 4 stars out of 5 for Blue Jasmine, which is rated PG-13.
Okay, I'm going to toss in, what do you gentlemen think about Sally Hawkins then? Do you think
she was wonderful?
Yes.
She was acting also, or is that more of a genuine performance?
I thought she was very good as well. I thought all of the performers
did terrific. Casting was really great.
Oh, casting was great, yeah, except for those two.
And once again, that's Blue Jasmine, rated PG-13. And now here's another film that we can talk about that all 3 of us have seen that have terrific performances. It's a movie called The Spectacular Now, rated R. Marie?
This is the second film that it discusses alcoholism. In Blue Jasmine, alcoholism was for adults, and this is about a young man played by, Miles Teller, a new actor to me, actually. In fact, this is a new. This film could introduce a lot of young actors that and actresses. We've got Shailene Woodley, who you saw in The Descendants, but now she's in this film also. And it's a story about a young man who goes into alcoholism because he can't deal with his life, and about a young woman who is retreating into herself because she has a problem. She wants to go away to college, and her mother won't let her. And these two meet up, and there's kind of a nice little romance going on there. He's broken up with a girlfriend, and he goes with Shailene, and she helps him with this alcoholism problem. And so they make a pact that they each have to confront their problems. She goes through that, and when he does, it goes off into a different direction. And here we see Kyle Chandler, an actor from Friday Night Lights, who always plays the good guy, and here he really plays against type without giving much away. And I like the turn that happened in there. And so I won't give anything more away, but it is graphic alcoholism and binge drinking and what havoc it can do on young lives. I'm going to give this a 3, but there is hope for everyone.
And how many stars?
3. 3 stars.
3 stars. Okay. And Tom?
This film really surprised me. When it started out, I thought it was going to be a John Hughes-style sort of light, frothy, high school coming-of-age comedy. With the most popular boy in the school, reeling from a breakup with his old girlfriend, who was the most popular girl in the school, who nonchalantly asked a plain Jane girl to the prom. I thought, we're in John Hughes territory here.
Right.
And I will admit that during the first 30 minutes of the film, I was sitting there kind of being rather annoyed, thinking it was going to be nothing more than a high school coming-of-age flick. And then all kinds of things start happening. And the film started going down in very, very interesting directions. And suddenly I realized I'm watching terrific performances and a film which has really gotten me sort of by the neck. So I was a total convert by the time I walked out of that film. So I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Yeah, I think you and I are on the same page once again here, Tom. This was could have been a Lifetime movie, or could have been, you know, the kind of thing they used to have on the, you know, the afternoon school, you know,
right.
Things.
Uh-huh.
After school special.
Sure, you know, that kind of thing. But it's handled so beautifully and so realistically that, and with the terrific performances, as you stated, that it really does work. I do want to warn people that it is rated R. So even though this is a story about teenagers, for teenagers, it's very adult in a lot of ways as well. So just want to make sure that people are warned about that. But I was impressed with it, particularly the performances that made it so authentic feeling. So I'm going to give it a 4 as well. So we'll average it out to a 3.5. Marie, would you be happy with that?
Yes.
For the Spectacular Now, which is rated R. Speaking of teenagers, there's another film that we should touch on, but I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show, so we do want to hear from you. What's been the best film in theaters in the last month? What's been a waste of time and money? Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. And you can also tweet us at KCURCST or email us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And speaking of tweets, Aaron contacted us through Twitter, and he said, I watched Monsters University this month. I found it quite boring, uncute, and unfunny. Basically, I found it the opposite of Monsters, Inc. Well, that's kind of interesting. Although it's certainly not on a par with Monsters, Inc., I did enjoy it. What did you guys think?
Yes, I did, too. I thought it went on for about 20 minutes too long, but I thought it was kind of ingenious.
I'd agree.
Yeah, so it's Pixar, not quite at its best, but it's certainly competent and I think family-friendly, obviously.
So, good enough, right?
Good enough, that's correct. Let's talk about another teen-oriented film. It's called The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones. Marie?
Well, first of all, we had the Harry Potter series for young teens. In fact, the young teens or young adult series is getting to be so popular, we might as well just cancel that out and just call them adult books, too. And I say that because it gets kids reading, so this is great. We have Harry Potter, and then we went on to the Twilight series, and then we had Percy Jackson. His movie is still in town. And now we have Mortal Instruments, which is from another book series. And we have the basic plot about a teenager in the late teens who has secret powers, and a parent, a father or a mother, is trying to protect them and doesn't tell them that they have the secret powers. But pretty soon somebody tries to come and kidnap either the parent or the child, and we go on with that. And there's werewolves and vampires involved in there and wormholes and so on. By the time I got through Harry Potter and the Twilight series and Percy Jackson, Mortal Instruments did not hold that much for me. I thought the acting was well done. In fact, there's some name actors here. I was never taken with Lily Collins' acting, and so as a lead actress, I just didn't care for her that much in here. But we have Aidan Turner and Jared Harrison here, and I'm only going to give it a rating of 2.
Yeah, I agree with you. I found it was very weak, very derivative, and there's nothing on the screen that you haven't seen done better in recent years in a number of other similar types of films. I realize that it's based on a very popular book series and that there are a lot of people that are fans, but I think that those fans that saw the movie and liked it are probably filling in the blanks from what they've read, and that's not really up on the big screen. And so I'm not going to be able to recommend it either, and I'm giving it a 2. So that's The Mortal Instruments, City of Bones, rated PG-13. We've got a call from Pam from Overland Park that would like to talk about Blue Jasmine. Hi, Pam. Welcome aboard.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I thought Blue Jasmine was stunning, and I think it really encapsulated a lot of feelings of women. I, too, also related it to Streetcar, but it's the despair, and it's also women taking ownership of their lives and their behavior. And I thought he was brilliant in terms of how he had that constant conflict going on between the two women. And I warned women not to go see it by themselves and not to go see it if they're depressed.
Ah, good point.
Because I really think it touches some nerves.
No question. Hey,
okay.
Thanks so much, Pam. Appreciate your feedback.
Thank you.
And now we're going to go to Aubrey from Roland Park, who wants to talk about another film. Hi, Aubrey. Aubrey, are you there? Aubrey, did we lose Aubrey? Oh, she wanted to talk about The Way, Way Back, which was a film that had some very good performances as well.
And it's still back in town now, too.
Yeah, it's a nice coming-of-age film. And thanks for your call, Aubrey. Sorry we dropped you. If you want to give us a call back, you can try that. Let's go to Jeff from downtown. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the 20 Feet movie. I really appreciated this movie a great deal because I think that it allowed these people to talk about their experiences in their own voices, lift up how difficult it was when some of them decided to try to become actual known artists themselves as opposed to being in the background. And I also appreciated how it lifted up what an important part these people played in the success of records, really starting in the late 50s and early 60s all the way up until the 90s. And I thought that it did this with a lot of sensitivity and intelligence, and I just thought it was a really superb movie.
Yeah, you're talking about the documentary 20 Feet from Stardom, which is about those backup singers who have popped up on so many classic records and never really got the due they deserved.
Great film.
Yes.
Thanks so much for your call, Jeff. Appreciate it. And here's Larry from Lawrence, who wants to talk about The Way, Way Back. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
Hey, I saw The Way, Way Back in at the Liberty Hall here in Lawrence last week, and I just thought it was a terrific movie. Great performances by Toni Collette and the young actors, the two young actors. And it reminded me a little bit of a Meatballs with Bill Murray because of the mentoring that the Sam Rockwell's Sam Rockwell's character was mentoring the young boy, and kind of somewhat of a coming of age movie where the boy gets confidence, and I liked it a lot.
I did too. I appreciate your feedback on that, Larry. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
You bet. Let's quickly talk about some other films that have opened up in the last month before we are joined by our guests from the Kansas International Film Festival. And let's talk quickly about one that, Marie, that was filmed in Columbia, Missouri. It's a horror film called You're Next.
I can make it short and sweet. Yeah. Your next was surprisingly good to me, interesting to me, and it's got all the unexpected things in there that you wouldn't think of. And if we remember a film from last year or so called A Cabin in the Woods, where you thought it was your typical horror film and it turned out to have something else in it and made it very interesting, this film does too. And it becomes, it concerns the cast and the people who are being preyed upon by certain home invasion people. And someone has some skills, and I won't go any further than that, but I'm going to give this a 3.
Really, you know, I thought it was pretty good as well, but, you know, it's so violent and it's so derivative. It's sort of like a R-rated version of Home Alone. You know, they're rigging
up
stuff.
Well, that's the fun part about it, though.
It's but it's pretty bloody, but it's well made, you know, for what it is. If you're a horror fan, then it probably delivers the chills that you want. And how many stars? 3?
I'm going to give it 3.
I'm going to give it 2, but we'll average it out to 2.5 for Your Next, rated R, and it earns that R rating for violence. And let's go ahead and talk about our trifecta of alcoholism movies, finishing it out with The World's End. Tom?
Yes, this comes to us from director Edgar Wright and the screenwriting acting team Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, who brought us the wildly funny Shaun of the Dead in 2004 and then Hot Fuzz in 2007. And this kind of continues that lunacy. Simon Pegg plays a 40-year-old loser longing to relive the glory days of his misspent youth when he was the coolest dude in town. Now it's 20 years later, and he's attempting an epic sort of pub crawl that would be repeating one from 20 years previous. So he strong-arms 5 of his original friends to reunite to repeat that infamous night on the town. And his friends now, in fact, are all very sort of successful and buttoned down. And particularly, he's got one now teetotaling uptight former friend that's played by Nick Frost. If it sounds like I'm setting up a male version of The Big Chill, well, yes, if the cast of The Big Chill were being chased around by emotionless robots a la Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Right.
I found it totally entertaining. I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Anne Marie?
Oh, boy, Tom. Okay, we disagree on this one. This is 2 movies in 1. The first half of it about the pub crawl, I think, was in The Big Chill in comparison and everything. The acting cast and everything was fine. And then it's though Simon Pegg decides to say, you know, I'm also in the Star Trek franchise, and I'm going to put a Star Trek plot in the last half of this and bring in the robots and invasion and so on. And, you know, it's a little subtle advertising for that. And I didn't like that one bit. And I thought it spoiled the whole thing and put me off track, and I kept looking at my watch. And alcoholism was a way to deaden their senses, for the last half of the movie. So I'm going to barely squeak a 2 out on this one.
I liked it a little bit better than you, Marie, not quite as well as Tom did. But it's cute. You know, it's funny. It generates its laughs. So shall we say, I'm going to give it a 3. So we say 3 between the 2 and the 4 and the 3. Sounds like a 3
all
to
the
me.
Place.
It's a math class today.
That's right. Good thing I've studied my digits here so we can get this right. We've had some people contacting us through various media here, and Ellen writes in with an email. She said, I thought Jobs had great acting by Ashton Kutcher, and an otherwise okay movie with an unsatisfying ending. I tend to agree with that. I thought he was quite good. I think that the movie kind of copped out on Jobs' personal life, but I thought it was interesting thematically.
I totally agree with what you just said.
Okay. And also, Leanne from Prairie Village asks, has anyone else noticed a lack of comedies lately? I just feel there's such a drought. I don't know. It seems like there's been plenty to me.
Unintentional comedies.
Yeah, some of them maybe not so much, right? I wouldn't know. I would have to actually sit down and go through the list and count them out. But there are quite a number of comedies out there right now. You could consider some of the coming-of-age films, like the Way Back we talked about, as a comedy.
Mm-hmm,
so
right.
I guess maybe it might depend on your definition.
Definition, right, of comedy.
Right. Let's quickly talk about a couple of films that are opening this week, opening actually today in Kansas City. One is called The Family, and that's a so-called comedy starring Robert De Niro and Michelle Pfeiffer, and they play a mob family that's in the witness protection program hiding out in rural France in Normandy. And, of course, they just can't get over their brutal ways. So, unfortunately, Tommy Lee Jones, as the FBI agent who is sent there to protect them, just can't keep them from giving themselves away as mobsters. This is a really violent movie, and I felt that it was kind of tone deaf in that respect, in that it's trying to generate laughs from some really hideous and horrible violence. And some filmmakers can get away with that. I think the Coen brothers do a great job with that. But Luc Besson, who's the French director who made this particular film, I think his touch just doesn't quite, make it worthwhile. Just doesn't quite work for me. So I'm only going to be able to give, even if it's got a great cast, I'm only going to be able to give The Family 2 out of 5 stars. And let's also quickly, Marie, talk about Austin Land.
Austin Land is actually a fantasy film. Keri Russell from television's, The Americans, is a woman who is so infatuated with the Jane Austen novels that she takes her bank account and goes to Great Britain for a resort. And everything is about Jane Austen there, the costumes and the menu and so on. But she starts to find that there are flaws in Jane Austen, and the actors who are there are acting as, the courtly men and the costumes and everything. And when she finds somebody that she's really interested in, is this really true love or is this real, R-E-E-L, love? Mm-hmm. And I thought that Keri Russell was miscast in here. I kept seeing Lisa Kudrow in the role of Keri that Keri Russell had. But the one who steals it is Jennifer Coolidge. She's constantly falling out of her dress to the, this is a big joke for her. And Austin Land, I thought, was beautifully, the soundtrack was wonderful and the set design was fine, but I thought that the cast was not altogether pulled in. So I'm only going to give it a 2.
I agree with you. I think this movie only deserves a 2. It's completely artificial. It's like a bad, kind of amateur community theater production. It's so poorly made. It's a likable cast, but boy, this film just does not work. And so I'm only going to be able to give Austin Land a 2 as well. We're going to be taking a short break now, and when we come back, we'll be talking about the unique films of the Kansas International Film Festival, which is coming up in the early part of October. Central Standards returns in just a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Russ Simmons, and this is Movie Critics Day here on Central Standard. I'm joined by my fellow critics, Tom Poe and Marie Asner. And we want to hear from you. What are the best films out there? What makes them great? Give us a call with your observations at 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. But before we get to your calls and finish up on some of the other films that we're going to be reviewing today, we have some special guests with us to discuss the Kansas International Film Festival. We have Dr. Dottie Hamilton from Avila University, who's a member of the Fine Arts Group and is one of the people behind the festival. You've been working at this for quite a long time now, haven't you?
13 years.
13 years. And we're also joined by the head of the Fine Arts Group, and that's Brian Mossman, who for years has been providing a lot of great art films to the Kansas City area. So welcome to you both.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. So first of all, Dottie, if you would, tell us, what is the, if there is a philosophy behind the Kansas International Film Festival that makes it maybe different from other events that we have around the area?
Well, I think the festival is promoting independent films and giving our audiences an opportunity to see films that they might not see in the theaters otherwise. I think that's the short answer to that. But also, at a festival, you have an opportunity to meet the filmmakers. We'll have filmmakers in attendance and question and answer sessions, and that certainly makes it different than attending a film in a theater where you don't have an opportunity to interact with the filmmakers.
And what goes into the process of deciding what films are going to be shown?
Well, we get over 100 and some submissions, and we start in, January, early February, watching these movies, and there's a lot of films to go through. And what we do on the board, we make sure we watch the film in its entirety. To be, we got to do that for the filmmaker. You got to watch the whole film. We vote on it. And it's, a pass-fail in the beginning. And And we go from there. But it's a long process.
You know, I've always been impressed with the variety of offerings at the Kansas International Film Festival. And I wonder what goes into the thought process in deciding, okay, this, we want to make sure we have this many, say, documentaries, this many comedies, this many narrative films. What's the process like there?
Well, I think we decided early on that we wanted the film festival to be eclectic, that some of our audience really prefers feature narrative films. There are a lot of people that really like documentary films. We have international films. We have local films and filmmakers. So the idea is that there is something for everyone. But we don't have a quota of there's going to be X many documentaries and so many of this. We look at what are the best films. So one year, maybe there'll be more in one category than another, because in the end, an entertaining film is a really well-made, entertaining, interesting film is what the standard is.
And what about supporting local filmmakers? How do you guys do that?
Well, we have the IFC, local organization here on Wednesday night. They have a number of shorts that they'll play, and they host a party afterwards. Kevin Wilmot's film will be here on closing night.
And that the name of that one is?
What is it?
Destination Planet Negro.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, Kevin Wilmot is a professor at KU, film professor, and he's made some really interesting films in the past. And one of them, which kind of made a splash at Sundance a few years ago, was a faux documentary about what would happen had the South won the Civil War. And he goes back to, you know, kind of his unique perspective on race relations in film. And for Destination Planet Zero or Negro, it's a kind of, as I understand it, people from the past coming into today and feeling disoriented by the different role that African Americans are playing in our society. And that's, I guess, basically the gist of the comedy. Yeah. I have not seen it yet, but I'm anxious to see it.
Another thing we do is we do KIFF Local. This is the first year for this, where everything is from Kansas City. So there's a 90-minute program with Todd Norris. I think he has one in it. But there's a number of films in that. Ben Mead will have a film in that as well.
Mm-hmm. And do you actually make it a point of encouraging these local filmmakers to contact you and say, hey, yeah, we're looking for submissions from you?
We ask people in the film community for suggestions for that. Sure we do.
Yeah. And if you were to say, okay, here's one film that's in the lineup this year I'm really excited about, which one would it be?
Well, for me, Conducting Hope will play on, I think, Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, dealing with the Lansing Prison. The choir is going to actually bus in 40 to 50 inmates to perform live on stage.
So this is a
documentary
about a choir at Lansing Prison.
Yeah.
I see. And Go ahead, Marie.
And I have heard them sing in concert, which they give concerts in the Kansas City area, two or three locations a year. Wonderful group.
And how about you, Dottie? Is there one that stands out for you?
Well, my list of 20 here, can I go? I think some of the social justice documentaries really stand out to me. There's Daughters of the Niger Delta. The filmmaker from that is coming in. What I really like about that film is that the filmmakers empowered the women from the Niger Delta, so they taught them to make their own film so they could speak in their own voice. And so the director is going to be coming in. The Kansas City Women in Film and Television is sponsoring this event, and they're all about empowering women, so this was a great marriage. But these women then talk about their lives in that difficult circumstances, some of the violence, some of the environmental pollution, just the issues, but they're making the film, and so I thought that was really unique. The director will be there, and there'll be reception and party for her after that event. That's a closing night.
And speaking of receptions and parties, what are some of the additional events that surround the film festival besides just obviously the screenings and the Q&As with the filmmakers and so on? What are some of the other things that are going on?
Well, on Saturday night, I think Friday night as well, after the shows, we'll be at McCoy's with the filmmakers, festival pass holders. On Wednesday night, I mentioned after IFC, they host a party. Kansas City Women in Film will host a party on Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that.
And what about, do you have like workshops?
No, we don't really do that. Mm-hmm. We even have to do it the way it is.
You do have question and answer, though, after the screenings.
With the filmmakers, mm-hmm. And we will be doing some Skype with some of the filmmakers.
I want to ask you, you're wearing a T-shirt right now, Brian, that says, it's okay to think while watching movies. Isn't that a Stan Brakhage quote?
It sure is. You know, I think when you come to the festival, I like to be challenged. So when I watch a movie, it's like the saying, it's okay to think while watching movies. And there's nothing wrong with that.
And would you say that is the guiding philosophy, perhaps, behind the festival, is encouraging that?
I think particularly with the social justice documentaries, which I'm in charge of programming those, so I would say, yeah, that's one of the things. So we have some films that are controversial that you have to think about, that not everybody is going to come away from the film believing the same thing, and I think that's a good thing. We have a number of those this year on issues from money and politics, Citizen Coke, which, as you may be aware, PBS pulled their intended broadcast of that film, and we'll be showing that film. The director, Academy Award-nominated director, will be Skyping in to discuss that film. We have a really amazing film about the black market organ trade.
Wow.
So Tales from the Organ Trade, and this filmmaker has done a wonderful job of talking about how desperate, ill people from wealthy countries buy kidneys from economic circumstances from poor countries, and the doctors and clinics and brokers that make money off of this. And you see that, wow, you understand all of the issues that go in this. And then she's offering some possible solutions to these problems. But just some really interesting films that make you think about situations.
I'd like to swing this conversation over into another direction for just a minute. As film critics, we get advance notice of the big films that are coming up in the fall and in the holiday season and so on. And so I was looking through my list of several months ago, and I saw August, Osage County with Meryl Streep, Blue Caprice about the Beltline murders in Washington, D.C., Great Expectations with Ralph Fiennes, Kill Your Darlings with Daniel Radcliffe, and is that Idris Elba is Mandela? And guess what? They are going to be on on the Kansas International Film Festival. So this is your chance to see them before Hollywood opens them up, probably around the Christmas holidays.
Well, like Dottie stated, we try to have something for everyone. So the studio films, you might see commercials, ads, or whatnot. But most of these unknown films, I think the quality of the films this year, both the docs and narratives, are probably one of the best that we've had. But you've got to, as a consumer, do some research. Go to the website, watch the trailers, read the synopsis, because they are very good, but they're kind of unknown to you.
Tell us quickly about the awards that are giving away during the
festival. Well, there's two awards. On the schedule, there's a jury award nominee for both the doc and the the narrative. This year, we upped it one. We normally have five. We have six in each category. So if you're going to sample some movies that you're not sure what to see, the board picked those as the best of the non-studio films. So those would be good ones to look at. Those will get an award. And then all the other films, not the studio films, the audience will vote on them. The winners of the festival, both the doc and the narrative, will play 2 weeks later. They'll get another run.
Great. So just kind of a vote. This is what we like. This is what we want to see.
Right. And on the jury award, winners will be nominated on Sunday at 11 o'clock at the Glenwood Arts. Whole Foods will be hosting some stuff to eat. And then those will play again, one on Wednesday, one on Thursday. Those will be the only two that will get a second showing.
And tell us a little bit about the Gather film series, and how does that tie in with the festival?
Well, we do it every Thursday at 7:30 at the Glenwood Arts. We play a film before New York or L.A. on some of them, definitely before Kansas City. And it's just an awareness for independent films. Part of the proceeds will go to the Kansas International Film Festival. It's a not-for-profit festival. It takes a lot of money to run that festival. But we want to keep the KIFF name out there every week. So it's a chance to see films that you really haven't seen any advertising for, similar to the programming that we have.
If something that we haven't touched on yet in this conversation that you want people to know about the Kansas International Film Festival, what would it be?
People, how do you buy tickets?
There you go.
You can buy tickets walking up and buying individual tickets, festival passes, you can buy those. When you buy individual tickets, normal pricing applies, but you don't come right into the theater. You're only seated 10 or 15 minutes beforehand, so there'll be a line outside the door for individual ticket holders. Festival pass holders are always seated first. So you can buy the festival pass, $50 before the 21st. On the 21st thereafter, it's $60. But you get your tickets early, and you are seated first, so that's got to be some value.
And the festival takes place at?
The Glenwood Arts in Metcalf South, October 4th through the 10th. And you can get more information on kansasfilm.com and look for the film guide and start looking.
And we'll have a lot more information on that on our website.
And for people who are not familiar yet with the Glenwood Arts Theater, there are three screens in the theater.
Right. There's one large one and two smaller ones.
Yeah. Dottie Hamilton and Brian Mossman, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate all the feedback. We're looking forward to the festival this year. And I also have a couple of other announcements, but I want to find out from you, our listeners, what films have you liked this month? What did you think we should avoid? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCURCST. And, of course, you can do it the old-fashioned way by emailing us at centralstandard@kcur.org. And, Tom, you had an announcement you'd like to make about a special film series that you're involved in.
Yes, and, in fact, it's going to go on both from now on through the spring, and it's called Movies About Making Movies. And this is a film series sponsored by UMKC's Program in Film and Media Arts and the Tivoli and the Missouri Arts Council. And we have chosen films which sort of pull back the curtain and sort of see the process of filmmaking itself through the eyes of filmmakers. This coming Tuesday, we're going to be showing the wonderfully funny documentary American Movie. And the producer, Sarah Price, is going to be coming into town to introduce the film and then do an audience Q&A following that. I won't take the time to go into all the things which are upcoming, so I'd suggest you go to the Tivoli website, tivolikc.com, and check out all of these films, which are movies about making movies.
We look forward to that. And also at the Tivoli, they are continuing their Tivoli Performing Arts Series. Coming up, the New York Philharmonic's A Dancer's Dream, which is this Sunday, September 12th at 1 o'clock, and the Handa Opera on Sydney Harbor's presenting Carmen, and that's Sunday, September 22nd at 1:30. And all of these things about the festival and about Tom's film series and about what else is going on, you can find out information at kcur.org. We'll make sure that we get all of that information up. Now, as long as I still have you two here, Dottie and Brian, this is a film review show, so I want to know from you what movie that you've seen lately that's currently in Kansas City theaters that you say, yeah, got to see this one. What has excited you so far?
Well, for me, it would be Blue Jasmine.
Yeah, we touched
on it. Sorry, Marie.
Yeah.
I stand alone.
How about you, Dottie? Is there something that's that you've gotten excited about lately?
I have been spending so much time watching 50 documentary films that it would be unfair to pick one of the few films that I've seen lately in the theater. And that's one of the difficulties with programming the festival.
Fair enough. And Brian?
Well, there's another one that's doing really well called Still Mine that won't go away. It's back over to the Leewood.
Well, bizarrely enough, we have a caller waiting on the line, Joan from Kansas City, Missouri, that wants to talk about just that movie. Hi, Joan.
Hi. I'm so happy to be able to praise this wonderful movie.
Tell us about it.
Well, it's got James Cromwell and is it Brigitte? Not Brigitte Bardot. It's a French actress.
Genevieve Bujold.
Both of them turn in wonderful performances. The setting is so natural. I believe it's in New Brunswick, but I'm not sure. It is a Canadian film, and it's about a couple late in life facing the problems that we encounter at that period. And Genevieve's part is a wife who is slowly sliding into Alzheimer's. And what her husband aims to do to make her life wonderful during this period. And it's just, it's really a heartwarming movie.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your feedback, Joan.
Sure.
Take care. By the way, I just want to make a quick correction. Tom, I think American Movie is going to be showing on Thursday, September 26th.
Oh, Thursday. Thursday,
not,
yes.
Not Tuesday. I think that might have just been a slip of the tongue.
That was a slip of the tongue, yes.
But we want to make sure that people arrive on the correct day.
It is Thursday. Thursday.
Very good. All right, great. Let's pick up where we left off. Marie, could you quickly tell us about a film called Closed Circuit?
Closed Circuit, I'll just do it this way. If you were a fan of the BBC spy series called Spooks that ran for about 8 or 10 years in Great Britain and came to the United States as M15, Closed Circuit is really a spin-off of that. Some of the same actors were in it. It was like watching the television series all over again, so I would say avoid this one, and I'm only going to give it a 1.
Sorry about that, Brian.
And watch TV.
Okay, and you say you're giving it a 1 out of 5?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, ouch. Okay, that's Closed Circuit, rated R. There are a couple of films that Tom and I wanted to make sure that we talked about, ones that we enjoyed very much, and the first one is Hannah Arendt, which is unrated, and it's about the famous German-Jewish philosopher. Barbara Sukawa gives a tremendous performance in this film. Tom, what did you think of it?
I think it's a great film, and it proves the point that it's okay to think when you're watching a movie.
There you go.
Because this is a film for those folks that want to think while watching a movie. Oh, it is a German biopic about the influential political theorist Hannah Arendt, who is most famous and still controversial for coining the phrase "the banality of evil." From an article she wrote for The New Yorker concerning the trial of Nazi leader Adolf Eichmann. Oh, it stars the excellent actress Barbara Sukowa, who is best known probably in this country for her films by Rainer Werner Fassbinder. Oh, and it centers around basically the controversy of her New Yorker article and how much she faced the backlash to stand her philosophical ground. If you want to learn about cultural history and to really think and talk about a movie, see Hannah Arendt. And I would just add, thank God we live in a city that brings such films to the heartland of the USA. The local art scene and radio stations like KCUR and, in fact, Brian's Fine Arts Group and folks at the Tivoli. It's the reason I've been able to stay in Kansas City. So I'm going to give Hannah Arendt 4 stars. I found it totally engrossing.
I'm going to agree with you on that. I thought it was quite good as well. You know, this is not an action movie at all. This is strictly people talking, and it still somehow manages to build tension. I found myself on the edge of my seat, but it's all about philosophy and thought. You know, she actually rejected the term philosopher.
Yes.
She actually preferred a political theorist,
that's
I believe.
Right, yes.
But it's interesting because everything that they're talking about is fascinating, I hope, to viewers. But it's definitely not an action flick, but this is something that definitely will make you think. So I'm
excited about a movie about a woman having an affair with Martin Heidegger.
Yeah.
This film is for you.
Yes. She was his pet,
right,
so to speak. Okay. And that's Hannah Arendt. Once again, that's unrated, but there's not really any objectionable material that I could recall from that. It's mostly in English, so I wanted to let people know about that, although there is a lot of German dialogue and subtitles, but don't be scared away because of that. And let's also talk about a film about Hollywood voiceover artists. It's called In a World. Tom?
Yes, we're talking about that series about movies about making movies, and this would fall into that category. But in fact, I find it unique because it's a movie about making movie trailers. I've always been fascinated by, in fact, the art of movie trailers, and I'd almost like to teach a class sometime just on movie trailers. This one is by the actor-screenwriter Lake Bell, and in fact, it won Sundance's Best Screenplays, and I think deservedly so. It tells the story of an underachieving vocal coach who is the put-upon daughter of the king of movie trailer voiceovers. And the young daughter discovers her own aspirations for becoming a voiceover star. So kind of amidst pride, sexism, and family dysfunction, she sets out to give women a new voice in American pop culture. It's a terrific cast of oddball characters. I found it great fun. In addition, because it's opening at the Tivoli tonight, For the premiere, there's going to be a meet-and-greet reception with Kansas City's nationally famous voiceover artists, and we've got a lot of them, which is really interesting that Kansas City has so many voiceover artists that really have a national reputation. There's going to be a reception for them from 6:45 to 7:15 before the film screening, so that'll be a lot of fun, too. I liked it. I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
And do you think that the soundtrack was something that played a part in your feeling about this film?
Yes, absolutely.
And what about it? What would you say stood out about that to you? Yeah, I've stunned him.
You've stunned me, right? What are you thinking, Russ?
Well, I just, you know, this is one of those things that elements that we don't talk about a lot, but sometimes when they do stand out or they're so effective, you say, hey, wait a minute, there's something special that's going on here as well. And that was my take as well. I enjoyed this film as much as you did, I think. So,
some people might quibble, but I won't, that at the end it gets a little bit direct and preachy in regards to sort of its desire to speak up for kind of women and the media. But since I believe in that, that didn't bother me.
Did you say 4?
I said 3.5.
3.5. I'm going to agree with you. 3.5 for In a World. That's rated R. And let's quickly talk about another film that opened on September 6th. It's called Riddick. Marie?
Oh, I'll take that. We all have our guilty pleasures. I missed the screening on this one, and so I went to the next day afternoon matinee. The theater was 3/4 filled up with men who looked like Vin Diesel with the shaved head and all the muscles, and I was the only woman there, and we all enjoyed the film. So I'm going to give it 2.5.
Yeah, I'm pretty much there with you. I think that it's good, it's fun, it's exactly what you're getting.
Exactly right.
Tom?
I would just say, sorry, Stan Brakhage, but... Maybe every once in a while it's okay not to think at a movie because you certainly won't be thinking while watching Riddick.
How many stars?
It does exactly what it sets out to do. And for that reason, I'm going to go ahead and give it 3 stars and say I actually kind of had fun watching it.
Yeah. I think we can average it out to a 3. Riddick rated R. We had an email from Ellen who wrote in, I thought Blue Jasmine was fabulous, whether you like Woody Allen or not. Sorry, Marie. And Francine writes in, I agree with Marie. I was bored with Blue Jasmine despite its fine soundtrack. So there you go. I want to thank my fellow movie critics, Tom Poe and Marie Asner. Central Standard returns on Monday with a discussion on difficult workplaces and how to make them better. And Up to Date is next with a look at karaoke. Our show today was produced by Matthew Long Middleton with Ross Steinmetz filling in there. And also, I want to also thank Lori Arbor for being our announcer. And I'm Russ Simmons, and this is Central Standard. Enjoy your weekend.